Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host, Ursula Rudenberg, for the next hour, joined by Ann Kinzel by Zoom. Thank you for listening in. Today, we will continue to explore our new circumstances as they play out in our local community.
Today, we have Dan Culhane, President and CEO of the Ames Chamber of Commerce, who will start off as your current guide to restaurants in the area. Then we'll move on to answer this question. What if I'm experiencing domestic violence during this pandemic? And finally, we'll check in with the Ames Resource Recovery Plant, not to mention Anna Banana's heart-to-heart messages. Dan, thanks for joining us. What better person to bring us the latest in restaurant options for takeout and delivery? What's the word?
Are you saying that because I eat out all the time and I'm always on social media talking about all the restaurants I go to?
Well, no, because you're such a distinguished restaurant critic. Come on.
Yeah, I love that, restaurant critic. I love that title. You know, in spite of this public health crisis that we're going through, by and large, almost every restaurant in Ames is open. Not every restaurant. Don't misquote me, but the vast majority of our restaurants are open, in our bakeries. You know, a lot of our folks have drive-throughs, and if they had a drive-through before this process started, they're certainly still open. I was talking to someone in my team the other day who was in a conversation with Chick-fil-A on South Duff, and they're built for drive-through service. Obviously, Bebop's is built for drive-through service. That's the only option at that burger place on South Duff Avenue. But you can go to West Street Deli, and Matt will take good care of you. You know, you can call in, you can order online, and we're seeing that from a whole host of our restaurants. We've seen a few that closed initially open back up here in the last week. Dublin Bay and Wallabies and Aunt Maud's, as an example, have opened up recently. I think there's only just a very small handful of folks that have decided to close until the dust sort of settles on this public health crisis. I do know that I've talked to almost all of our restaurant owners, and they're very, very appreciative of the business that the Ames and Story County community have brought to them during this pandemic. I'll also say that while it's been great to see the support, it still pales in comparison to their dining rooms being full at lunchtime or on an evening basis. And so it's going to be incumbent upon all of us to really go out and support these folks in mass when it's safe to do so.
Yeah, I think too, the workers who depend a lot on tips for their income, the servers and so on, that's got to be an issue as well, because the tip wage is very low in Iowa.
It really is. You know, this isn't to pat myself on the back, but last night I was at Wallabies and I tipped about 25%, in large part because I know the people that were working there, like all of our servers across the country, are dependent upon tips and things like that. And so I'd encourage people to tip heavy if they can, and continue to get out there and support the wide variety of businesses around our community.
Dan, we've lost the Village Inn. Are you aware of any other restaurants that you think are in danger of going under during this time?
Good question. You know, at this point, no. You know, you hear these national statistics about the percentage of businesses that will likely go out of business as a result of this. But at this point in time, Ursula, we've not heard of anybody that is intending to close their doors as a result of this pandemic. Mm-hmm. I would say, and this is anecdotal, I have not talked to the owners of Village Inn, but I do believe there was some discussion about closure of that location even before the public health crisis started to occur.
I see.
And they were in a serious bankruptcy situation, is my understanding. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dan. Thank you so much for joining us, and apologize for the delay in getting you on.
Not at all. Thanks for having me. All of you have a great day. Hang in there. Stay safe, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you. And that was Dan Culhane, President and CEO of the Ames Chamber of Commerce, just giving us the update on the restaurant scene in Ames, which actually was very positive, right, Ann? That was
very.
Yeah. So now for a more serious but really necessary conversation, Tess Cody is Executive Director of Access, Assault Care Center, extending shelter and support. Tess Cody, we have two very important questions to start off. First one is, we're being told to stay put at home. What if one of us does not feel safe at home? What do we do because of domestic violence? And the second question is, conversely, what if we decide to leave a domestic violence situation? What is the safe thing to do?
Oh, those are big, hard questions. And I think reality is that there's a lot of people wrestling with that right now.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us today, Tess.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Ursula. And thanks for bringing this forward. I think it's an intimidating topic, but a really necessary one. Maybe starting with the first one, the what if I'm not safe at home? You know, I think just reminding folks that access services are still available. So our hotlines are still active. Our advocates are still working and supporting survivors. And I know that law enforcement is as well. It looks a little different. You know, we've been getting creative as to try to, you know, balance the needs of folks. But we're still here and we're still helping. And so I would always say, like, starting with some of that initial safety planning of, okay, what are my options? You know, do I have somebody I can go stay with who's a safe person? Do I, and again, like, that's a loaded question nowadays, a little bit about health, but I think that we still have our support systems, and just reminding ourselves that while we might have been through a period of social distancing, we still have lots of supports out there. And so not losing that, I think it can be, I know I personally have gone to a place where it's kind of like, oh my gosh, my friends are so far away. And it's easy to start in that place. So I would just remind that that's a good place to start. If it's helpful to just kind of give, I think some folks have asked us when they've called for our services, just, you know, what to expect, because it does look a little different, like I mentioned. And so, sometimes when considering, okay, what are my options? It's helpful to know what I'm getting into. So, some, I guess, highlights, maybe is the wrong word, but the highlights of our, services and how they've pivoted here in Story County. A lot of our services are now offered remotely. And so that means we do things kind of like, you've heard a lot about telehealth therapy right now. We have a very similar platform where you can do a video, counseling services with an advocate. The benefit to that, which, you know, I think we're seeing some interesting things is, that gives a lot of nimbleness about when and where that happens, that maybe we didn't necessarily have when it was all in person.
Okay, so Tess, for a second to slow down for a minute.
I'm rolling.
you've mentioned so far that there's a hotline that can be called. Give us the hotline, and then tell us how one accesses the remote services that you're talking about. How do these things happen?
Oh, that's a good slow down and great question. So we actually have a couple different hotlines. So we have one that you'll get a sexual abuse counselor all the time. And that number is 1-800-203-3488.
Repeat that.
Yep. 1-800-203-3488. That's 24/7, 365, always for a sexual abuse counselor. We also have a similar 24/7 hotline for domestic abuse, and that's 1-855-983-4641. That's 1-855-983-4641. And both of those are kind of to your question there, Ursula, both of those are just a great way to start services, start getting support. You know, I think sometimes folks feel like, oh gosh, you know, is my situation, you know, enough to call for? And here's the great thing about both of those hotlines is nobody's there to judge your situation. They're just there to help support you, to listen, to problem solve. And so what I always encourage is if you're just in a situation where you're not comfortable with, you know, whether it's a relationship and what's happening and you're feeling unsure, or, maybe a sexual experience that you, gosh, you're not sure if that was abuse, but it's sure you weren't quite sure, it's worth it to call. If you're worried about a friend, it's worth it to call. The folks on those lines are there to just, again, like I said, listen, provide support, problem solve and talk you through some of those options, like what I started to launch.
Tess, you mentioned telehealth as an example. So do you also have other means to communicate with people besides the phone lines?
So, we do have, of course, the video lines, phone lines, chat lines. Folks have actually been getting creative and using email as well. So I think that it's really a lot of the conversations we've had with survivors is what's the best way for us to be communicating?
So what's your email address?
Yeah. We have a general line. You can actually go to our website and go to our contact us page, our about us page, and contact us. But otherwise our,
what's the website?
Yep. It's assaultcarecenter.org. assaultcarecenter.org.
Okay.
And then our general, we kind of have a general inbox there that you can contact, and that actually comes directly to myself, and I make sure it gets to the advocate that can help you, and then you can directly correspond with that advocate. So that's a great, great kickstart.
So how do you...
Yeah, with everybody in the home, it's got to be a little bit difficult if you're in a scary situation to be able to choose the best means to contact.
Very much so. And so that's where it's like, for some folks, they need something where it's not verbal. So, that verbal sounds a little bit, it's not spoken because they need something quiet. And so that's where texting, email has been helpful. And I think what's tricky about all of these and just acknowledging it is sometimes folks don't have access to a device like a phone or a computer without monitoring. And so that has long been a challenge for us, is figuring out kind of navigating that. And I would put out there, too, especially we also serve adults, of course, domestic abuse victims, but we also serve children. And, a previous path to serving kids was often through a non-offending parent. And we'd meet with folks at schools. But with schools closed, gosh, that's a tricky avenue, to find that safe haven, to find that space, when often, again, phone devices are monitored for kids and for many victims. You can always still go to the police department and they can always still loop you in. We've also had folks who start services by going and getting, if it's a sexual assault, going to the emergency room. I know that's a little scary now, and I'm pretty proud of Story County. They've made a brave decision. They're shifting all sexual assault exams to actually happen at Teeland, so that way it's a little bit more of a...
So that would be the student health center?
Yep, over at ISU. If you end up accidentally going to the wrong place, people will still help you get to the right place. But what I appreciate about that is just recognizing that I think emergency rooms were a little bit intimidating to folks. And so, is there a way that we can make this feel a little bit more more accessible just by the venue? And so that was one move that has happened.
So is that open now? Because the university is closed.
Yes. Yeah. They'll still do those cases there. Yep.
Health center is open to my understanding.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Okay. So Tess, if somebody feels they really do have to leave their home, is the shelter, mm-hmm. is there a place for them to go? Is it open?
Yes, our shelter is open. We're still doing intakes very frequently. And so they can still come and stay with us. We've actually done some work to make some precautions to help make that shelter space feel safer for folks as well. So things like, we've set a kind of new guideline. Everybody gets their own room. Before, if we had two single adults, they might have had to share a room. We aren't doing that anymore. We're just kind of looking at a whole bunch of precautions like that, making sure everybody has a stockpile of food in case they needed to quarantine. Just doing a lot of things to help equip people to be successful in that shelter space. But our shelter is still up and running.
And at the shelter, are you monitoring for, people showing signs of the illness so that the question I'm getting at is, somebody goes to the shelter, can they really feel that it's a safe place to go to not get infected?
That's a hard and complicated question. So part of our standard and code of ethics is that we can't deny somebody services based on their health status. And so you'll see very quickly how that gets complicated. So we actually can't, and I'm not a healthcare provider, so I can't screen somebody for COVID. I can't do a test for them, and I can can't do a whole lot to do that. But what I can do is encourage communication.
And so, Tess, are you monitoring, like, are you asking people to monitor temperature or do things like that?
What we've done is we've given a lot of resources to clients and to our staff. We've done a training for our staff about, like, what are the signs and symptoms? So that way they can do some of that self-monitoring. And what we just say is, like, this is a really complicated thing. Just like you want this to be a safe place, the next person who comes in wants it too as well. And so just encouraging open dialogue if they are starting to have symptoms and equipping them to tell us if they have symptoms has been our approach. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of – go ahead, Ursula.
Have you seen any change in what's happening as a result of the recent, you know, month of people sequestering themselves in homes? Have you noticed any difference?
You know, it's been interesting. We've kind of been talking to programs around the country. And, you know, nationally, the calls for service are way up, way up. And I would say, you know, we have a steady flow, but it's not for us a huge spike yet. But I'm not entirely surprised. It sounds like we looked at some of the studies around Katrina and some of other locations, and it sounds like it's around that 45-day mark where you start to see places really spike with services. So we're kind of bracing, honestly, for an increased request for service. I think people have been creative in keeping themselves safe, keeping their families as safe as they can for a period of time. And I think there's going to be a point here soon where folks start to run out of options. And so that's when I hope they know that we are here for them and we'll reach out. But I would say one thing that I have noticed is just some different dynamics with some of the needs. You know, this has been a bit of a whiplash in terms of economic impact here in the last, you know, month. And so already we're starting to see just an increased need for folks for financial assistance. And so that I think is important when we think about, okay, if I need to leave, do I have options like staying in a hotel room? Do I have options like paying for a bus ticket to get to my my mom's house? Or do I have options like paying the deposit on an apartment? Man, if you suddenly lost work a month ago, that starts to get a lot harder to tap into some of those options. And so I anticipate that trend to unfortunately continue.
What kind of emergency financial assistance can Access provide locally?
Yeah, you know, the bulk of our resources currently are in rent and deposit assistance. And so we do have those funds available now. I also have been watching really carefully. So, within one of the versions of the CARES Act, there have been some increased dollars for something called the Emergency Solutions Grant. We're a recipient of that grant. And my understanding is there should be an increase in dollars that should enable us to continue to provide and hopefully increase some of the rent and deposit assistance.
And you're eligible for the CARES Act or some of the CARES Act funding too for employees, aren't you?
We are. Yeah, we are currently, and I hopefully don't regret this. We are currently focused on using our existing grants so that we don't end up double dipping. And because we have not needed to lay anybody off, we have, the bulk of our payroll runs through grant processes that I think will be okay, but we're really monitoring that as well.
So there must be some change in some areas statewide and other centers or housing or things like that. Are you taking people from outside the area? How's that working?
Yeah, so if somebody needs shelter, our shelter beds are first come, first serve, and so we are obligated by the state to not say, oh, you're from, you know, Webster County, we can't take you. And so it just depends on who calls them again. So we would serve somebody from outside. And I think you've kind of zeroed in on something that is a little bit challenging right now, which is many shelters across the state have really significantly had to decrease their bed count or close entirely because of the virus. And they think of kind of a mass shelter setup. It really wasn't safe. And so they needed to make adaptations. Some of them are doing things like going to providing clients with just hotel rooms, but they're having to really reduce the number of total beds they provide because of the cost of the hotel room. So I think statewide, we've seen a significant decrease in total shelter beds available. And so I suspect that there's going to just be some strain on the system because of that.
Sure. Now, I understand that Access provides some support group services and things like that. How does that continuing during this crisis?
Man, we've had some kind of innovation going on there. I'm really proud of my staff's creativity on this front. So we are doing some groups. One of the platforms we use is called DoxyMe, and it allows for kind of this virtual support group via video feed. But what we've tried recently, because the survivors requested it, and recognizing that this is not confidential, but them knowing that going in, we created a private Facebook group, and they've actually been creating kind of like big questions and then discussion below each question within the Facebook group. And it's been really vibrant form of support. And I would not have said previously, like, man, let's start a Facebook group. But it worked. And for that group of survivors, that was how they wanted to kind of complete out their support group. I don't know if it'll work again because they all knew each other and could do that kind of private thread beforehand. But I'm really interested to see just kind of what opportunities there might be for some of that kind of continuing group work, because I think that sort of connection is so important.
Well, Tessa, speaking of support, I have a question. I'd like you to give some advice, if possible. If I'm somebody who has a friend who's calling me and is saying that she's having problems at home and that she's feeling unsafe with her partner or somebody she's living with, or that her children are unsafe, and she's calling me for advice or for help or for support, what can you offer as advice in that situation? What can friends do in this case? Because right now we're all kind of depending on each other to support each other by phone.
Absolutely. I mean, I think starting with almost some of the language you had there of just support and caring and listening to that person, because...
But can you give concrete? I mean, can you be concrete? What does that really look like? What is caring and listening really sound like?
Yeah, it looks like, some of that, you like the kind of active listening of like, oh, that sounds hard, or kind of parroting back so that they know that you heard them is important. I think not always interrupting and letting them talk.
Can you explain a little bit better what you mean by parroting back?
Yeah, have you ever had somebody where they're like listening to you and they either repeat a little bit of what you said, or they repeat what you said but in different words, but it means exactly the same thing? And so that really affirms, like, oh gosh, they get it, they understand, versus having somebody who, they kind of repeat something back and it means not even, it's clear that they weren't even listening because it doesn't mean the same thing. Showing you're invested and really get what they are saying matters to people, especially when the abuse sometimes is kind of crazy making. And so it sounds just like, am I even making sense of this? And then at least I have this one person who gets it and who understands.
So it helps the other person think it through?
Yeah, it helps the other person think it through. It's affirming. And again, like it's about being heard. And for a number of survivors, they aren't heard by their partners. And so being heard matters.
A typical question that somebody might get would be, what should I do? Your friend calls you up and says, my partner is becoming violent. What should I do? How do you respond to a question like that?
I'd never want to have somebody feel like you're ducking and dodging, but I always try so hard to turn that back, because here's the thing. I would say in my experience, one, folks are most likely to follow through when it's their idea. It's sometimes hard to, even though it might be your best friend, it's sometimes really hard to know exactly the right answer to that question, right? What should I do? Gosh, you know, do I actually know all the details of this situation? And so I might actually respond to that with like, okay, tell me more about what's going on. And then I might respond with a like, what do you think, what are some of the things you've tried? Or, you know, what have you tried in the past that's worked and what's different now? And sometimes that'll start to actually tease out a few options that are on the table.
So, Tess, if you feel that you're a friend is in a really emergent situation after you've teased out some of these details, at what point do you introduce, hey, we have a access in Ames. Have you thought about contacting them?
Well, I think that's always a great option. And I think it's one that you can introduce at any point along the way. You can even, if you're not sure about how to structure that conversation, if you're comfortable, you could even do something like, gosh, you know, this sounds like a really difficult conversation or a different difficult situation. I'm not sure I know the right answer, but I know somebody I think we could call together. Would you be comfortable with us doing a three-way call and calling access? And you could do something like that where you actually bring an advocate to the conversation.
And what if your friend says to you or says to me, I want to come and stay with you?
Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, I think everyone's going to have to assess that risk themselves.
Well, do you think it's better to say, come and stay with me? Or you think it's better to advise somebody to contact access?
You know, as I would love to say that access is the best support system out there. But, you know, survivors do their best when their support system supports them. And so I think if it's a friend that you feel comfortable with that and that you think you can handle as a roommate, I would encourage you to consider it. If it's not something, it doesn't work for your family balance. Don't feel guilty about that at all. We're here to support for that exact reason. And sometimes you might not say, yes, come live with me, but you might say, hey, you know, I can't do this now, but I would love to help you look for an apartment. Or I would, you know, like you can kind of offer up another option there. So I wouldn't say don't say no to access. We're absolutely here for that reason. And I also would say if you have the capacity and it feels like a good option, go for it.
Okay. Well, thank you. We're speaking with Tess Cody, who's the executive director of Access, the Rape Crisis Center and Domestic Abuse Center. Tess, any last words before we end the conversation? What do you feel is really most important to leave us with?
You know, I just really appreciated the last questions there and just remembering that the folks survivors turn to first are their friends and family. And us being supportive, whether that's listening, making great referrals, or just helping problem solve, man, that can make a big difference in terms of their long-term safety and just their healing in the long run. So I just really appreciate folks knowing that this is a tough time and some of their friends are going to come to them with tough conversations. And I know that that we can be great support systems. And if you feel like you can't, Access is here.
And give us again the website and the crisis line.
Yep, assaultcarecenter.org is our website. And our two hotline numbers are 1-800-203-3488 and 1-855-983-4641.
And tell us, give us the numbers again and tell us what they're for.
Yep. Sexual assault is the first one. That's 1-800-203-3488. And the domestic abuse one is 1-855-583-4641. And if you call the wrong one, don't stress. They'll get you to the right person.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for making the time for this.
Yeah. Welcome back to Local Talk on KHOI, COVID Response Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa in the time of COVID-19. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for the hour, together with Ann Kinzel, who is joining us via Zoom, among our other guests.
Thank you for listening in, everyone. Even during the crisis, our need for energy continues, maybe more now than ever while we're cooped up at home. Bill Schmidt from the City of Ames is the person who makes sure that energy is there for us. He's the supervisor of the Ames Resource Recovery Plant. So good morning, Bill.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good. So much is changing in our lives in the last month or so. What's happening at the Resource Recovery Plant, and are things changing, or are they just staying the same?
Well, things have changed. With what's going on in the world right now, there have to be some changes made. One of the things we did is we followed the guidance of the other city departments. Our facility is not open to walk-in business anymore, and that's really unusual because we're used to talking and interacting with people. And now the only ones we have coming in are the commercial haulers. They're still bringing the garbage trucks in. They've seen quite a reduction in the commercial waste, as you can imagine, with all the businesses being closed or people not going out as much. Conversely, they've seen an increase in the household waste. So it's been kind of a balancing act trying to figure out how to handle business. We've also done a number of things within the facility with social distancing, trying to figure out how to best handle meetings, how to get information, how to keep employees informed of what's going on. It's been challenging. We've both kind of like the Zoom we're doing right now, just trying to figure out the best way of managing and handling the business.
Now, the resource recovery plan.
Excuse me for a minute. Bill, could you lean in a little bit? We're getting an echo in your room. If you could lean a little closer to the computer. Thank you.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah.
So the resource recovery plant helps produce energy for the city of Ames. When the mix changes away from commercial waste to more household waste, how does that affect that energy production?
It's a minor effect. It's not a large. It doesn't make much of a difference because there are still some of the same components in there. We're still seeing the fiber products, plastics. So it doesn't affect the BTU value too much. We usually see with the commercial, we see normally a little drier waste. We don't get as much of the organics. That's one of the other things we are still doing is we're still doing our food waste diversion program. And that allows people to drop off their organics at our facility. We have a self-serve dumpster outside for them to put the material into. As of the 1st of April, we waived all fees so people can do that for free. It doesn't cost them anything.
Let me repeat that real quickly because our audio is not real great. Mr. Schmidt just said, and Bill, correct me if I get this wrong, the food waste diversion program is continuing, which is food waste diversion. Is that the same as composting, or is this something different?
This is a little bit different. This is the material is taken and composted by a commercial composter. This is an opportunity for people to bring in their own food waste and drop it off, and then we work with a commercial composter to take that material and turn it into compost.
Okay, so what Bill is saying is you can take the food waste as opposed to the dry garbage, and there's a bin there for where people can deposit it themselves, and they have waived the fee for that, so there is no cost to that. And clearly this helps the recovery plant as well, right? Because this is something that you really can't use in the recycling process.
Correct. It doesn't make a good fuel, as you can imagine. Trying to burn banana peels, apple cores do not burn well. So this is a good alternative use for them to get them turned into compost.
And
so
does
Bill,
this, and does
I
this
had,
in, me one more second, and then I'll be done here. Bill, does this include meat products?
It does. Since we're using a commercial composter, we can take some meat in the product. We, however, ask not to have bones. So if you have a nice T-bone steak, please keep that out of it.
Okay.
So, Bill, in our household, we enrolled in the project, the food waste diversion project, before the COVID crisis. So let's say that I'm home and I'm looking for a good science project for my kids or something. Can people still enroll now?
Yes, or if you just want to use your own pail or your own container, an ice cream bucket works well. Just put material in there and bring it to the Resource Recovery Plant at 110 Center Avenue. And on the north side of the building, we've got a regular rolling garbage bin out there with an orange lid on it. You can just jump that material right in there. We also have a glass bin right beside it. If people want to bring their glass to recycle, they can do that there, or they can do it at the Hy-Vee gas stations, the North Fairway store. When the downtown Fairway gets their parking lot reconstructed, we'll have the bins back there also.
So the local grocery stores are still taking recyclables?
They're still taking glass, yes. We have a contract with one of the haulers to pick the glass up weekly and bring that to us. Once again, it's something, there isn't any minimal interaction with people, so it's very easy to do. It's one of those services we want to continue to allow us to make the best fuel that we can for the power plant.
So, and you mentioned we started the conversation by talking about some things that had changed and had not changed. Are there any other things that you can share with our listeners about what's going on at the plant?
Sure. One of the big ones, is, as I said, is we're not allowing walk-in business anymore. So we used to do business with people who'd be able to bring their own garbage in, or if they had a mattress, they could bring that in and drop it off. At this time, we're not able to offer that service. We are a satellite service for Metro Waste Authority for household hazardous materials. Those have also been put on hold. They've closed their drop-off site, so we've not been able to do that either. We're just asking people to please hold on to those items for now, and in the future when we get over this, we'll be back up in full service and operation again.
Bill, could you repeat that? Your sound dropped out a little bit. We just heard hazardous materials, so I think we want to loop back to that for a second.
Sure. Household hazardous materials, we're not accepting drop-off right now, and this is something normally this time of year people start doing clean-out, cleaning the garage out, the basement, and they find some of those automotive chemicals, some old weed killer that they've had for a while. We're not accepting that right now at this time. When we open the facility back up to the public, we will take materials then.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. Now, a more general question, as we all know, the recovery plant was closed for quite a while, and I still have people asking me, is the plant working again or not? Is it fully operational again, or are they only half working? So tell us, is the plant back on the block?
The resource recovery plant has always been operational. The challenge we had was with the power plant. The power plant was undergoing some major maintenance and remodeling and retrofit. And when they are down, we have no place that we can take the garbage and burn it. They have been up and operational since January. It's working out very well. They're going to do a small minor maintenance project at the end of this week, the first part of next week. So some of the material may be diverted to boom, just a small amount of it, and then they'll be back up and full operational again. It's been nice to be able to offer that service to the citizens. That's something been very proud of over the 45 years of our existence, is being able to divert, 65 to 70% of the material from the landfill. It's nice to be able to continue that service.
So the power plant being operating or how much doesn't really affect the resource recovery plant that much?
The power plant operation, it has a very dramatic impact on resource recovery, because if they're not operational, we have no place to send the material.
So what did you do while the plant was closed?
We did a lot of work within the facility. We did some updating. We had a study done almost 2 years ago that talked about how we could improve the recovery of it, and we made a lot of those recommendations within the facility. We redesigned. We've got a fantastic staff here that engineered, designed, and fabricated and installed a number of new air knives so that we could increase the amount of material that we're diverting from the landfill.
Yeah. Well, the recovery plant is really a huge cooperative project between the city and the citizens of Ames, and really works to everybody's benefit and has for many years. So in these last few minutes, this is kind of your chance to tell us what are your pet peeves in terms of what you wish people would do differently to make things just operate a little bit better for you.
Sure, no problem. I would like to add one thing. We did have a no charge your waste day scheduled May 2nd. Unfortunately, with what's going on right now, we have postponed that. We have not scheduled a new date yet, but please keep that in mind and look at our website. One of the big things I would ask people to do is, whether it's these times or any time, is to really look at the amount of material you've got. Can you reduce the amount of material you throw away? We do such a great job with Rummage Rampage in the summertime. We'd like to keep that momentum going throughout the year and getting people to really look at what I buy, what I use, rather than just throwing away, is there a way to reuse it to help someone else out?
So this is a good time to sort through your stuff while you're stuck at home and create a pile in your garage of what to bring to Rummage Rampage, right?
It certainly is. And when you're sorting through stuff and throwing things away, please be mindful. You don't want any batteries thrown away in the garbage. Rechargeable batteries, they create challenges for us. They explode and cause fires. So,
where should batteries go?
Batteries, just hold on to them, and when we open back up, you can bring them to us, and we'll take them free of charge anytime we're open.
Okay,
so not throwing your batteries, your rechargeables away, should be something that people shouldn't do at any time. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. That is correct. That should not be done at any time because those have chemicals in them that we want to keep out of the waste stream.
But they could be dropped off at the resource recovery plant separately.
That is correct. You drop off resource recovery plant. A lot of the other stores will accept them. Best Buy has a spot for rechargeable batteries to go to, and they recycle, take care of them. Interstate Batteries takes a lot of them also.
Okay, well, thank you. This is Bill Schmidt. He's supervisor of the Ames Resource Recovery Plant. Thank you so much for joining us, and we really appreciate the work you're doing, keeping the lights on and helping to keep the lights on here in our county. Susan, before we head out, do you have any other words? This is Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for Ames. Susan, do you have anything you need to check in with us about?
No, just a reminder, again, as we're expecting some warmer weather this weekend, we are asking our community for assistance in enforcing social distancing. So making sure that when they're out and about that they are staying away from one another, but also to understand the rules of those being outside. So right now, if people are outside at the parks, they may be on trails, they may not be on the playground. But if you're concerned and the group is 10 or more, you can, again, call us at 239-5670, 239-5670. That's our COVID-19 hotline, or email us at COVID-19@cityofames.org. We have to prioritize those calls against, sending police officers versus sending Ames Parks and Recreation employees out just to ask people to disperse. So it's just a good reminder. The rule is 10 or more people and 6 feet apart for everybody.
Yeah, thank you. We're keeping the curve flat in Central Iowa, and let's keep it that way.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Anna Banana is here, I think. Miss Anna Banana Bread?
I am here. Yep, it's Banana. With KHOI's heart-to-heart messages to connect you to love, comfort, and your community. So today I'm going to honor my dad because my dad liked to give me lots of advice, lots and lots of advice, and still at 47 gives me advice continuously. So one of the things that my dad used to say to me continuously is that boredom is a luxury and that that we are human beings, we are not human doings, because he felt like I was always in a state of motion. And so I'm just going to read a couple of these heart-to-heart messages that kind of embrace the spirit of what my dad was trying to share with me. And this is from Lois Slope, who is a PEO chapter HN member. And I took a deep breath as I read her message, which is so lovely. And Lois says, "We must appreciate the conditions that are requiring us to be still. Do not spoil these quiet hours by wishing them away, waiting impatiently to be active again. The quiet time for reflection can be one of the best teachers and life lessons. Adverse circumstances can become growth opportunities when you affirm your trust in God, and God will not let go of our hands or transform our trials into blessings," which I thought was such a beautiful message in this time of forced isolation and kind of just downtime, quiet time. And then the last one I'll just read to you again is from Fayetteville, North Carolina. So Kath writes, as advice for what to do, keep doing your everyday chores and find three simple things to be grateful for every day. And so these three grateful things today that I am grateful for, I'm going to say the snow. You might be surprised to hear this, but I am appreciative of the snow as it made me take a deep breath and walk my dog and look at the beauty of the snow that was stuck on the trees and branches, which was so beautiful. So I'm just taking a breath, and I hope that all of you take a breath. And if you would like to respond to my messages, I invite you to call or text me, Anna Banana, at 515-809-0077. Or if you would like to have your own read on air, you can also send me a text at 515-809-0077. Or you can email me at khoiradio@gmail.com and put heart to heart in the subject line, please. So I hope that our heart to heart message inspires you to connect to our community. And from the bottom of our hearts, KHOI and Anna Banana, thank you for listening. And we send out our love to each of you today.
Thank you, Anna Banana Bread. We've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've been your hosts, Ann Kinzel, Ursula Rudenberg, and Anna Banana has been here. Nice shirt, Anna. Thank you for listening in. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. Usually, today it does not. Today at noon and 7 p.m., stay tuned for KHOI Previews the Arts. And also remember that you can hear a recording of this show at khoifm.org later on today with links to the guests and the information you heard during the program. And we heard some very good information today from lots of people at the city. Also remember that KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. Anne, you want to take us out?
Sure. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of K.H. Shelley. We also heard Staying Inside by Brent McCullis and John Lennon's Imagine. What a great way to start the day. As covered by Mayo Clinic doctors Elvis Francois and William Robinson. Stay tuned for Headline Now and Democracy Now at 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. We'll see you again on the radio.
See you again on the radio.